It was supposed to be beneficial all round, a win-win for everybody. But the betterment of people's lives was never the intention behind this service. They knew that the system couldn't hold that many people. They knew that the fantasy they were selling was a fraud. They knew exactly how to monopolize other people's desperation, people that I cared about. Before I moved in with my parents, I fit the criteria of Islet's target demographic. Lonely, exhausted, simultaneously over and understimulated by my occupation, while significantly stressful, the administrative work I was doing was far from fulfilling. I spent much of my time in my apartment, and the minimal human contact that I had outside of work typically consisted of fleeting, awkward interactions that resulted from accidental walking into someone's path on the sidewalk, or standing too long in front of the jars of pasta sauce at the grocery store. People were generally polite in these situations, but I could always spell out inconvenienced from the lines on their faces. So, when things got bad for me, I moved back home. I couldn't take the monotony any longer, at least not on my own. My parents never had the best life advice, and my younger brother's words were more often damaging to my self-esteem than constructive. But none of that really mattered. All of the pain I was experiencing, and even the numb lack thereof, would be replaced by reassurance. A hearty comfort, akin to the consumption of a steaming bowl of soup at the end of a day spent out in the cold. Whenever I was held by someone I loved. My mom pulled me into her arms when I arrived on a doorstep, and I was overwhelmed by the sensation of stability. My life was far from being put together, but this was an unwavering foundation that assured me I could set my roots here and finally branch out from them. "I missed you so much," she exclaimed, not completely unlike the way she would talk to a baby. Despite being well past my infant years, I didn't mind. My adolescent self would have certainly found it embarrassing, possibly even demeaning. But now, the chiming of my mother's voice hit my ears like a lullaby. It's funny, the way you see your parents as godlike before realizing just how humanly fallible they are, and then revert back to appreciating them as superhumans once you come to understand the gravity of sacrifices they've made for your benefit. Of course, that's only if they weren't selfish assholes. Not everyone is so lucky. I don't blame those who were truly alone for buying into the services. Islet was promising. An escapist fantasy. Freedom from responsibilities. Just sign here, please. It was bait to anyone who didn't have a support system. Even though coming home was an overall welcoming experience, it didn't take me long to pick up on the fact that something was off. My parents would whisper to each other when they thought I wasn't looking, and I noticed the tenseness in their muscles that seemed to arise whenever we were together as a family. I found out why they were behaving this way one night after we sat down to a meal together. I asked my brother to pass the potatoes, and instead of simply complying, he remarked, "Why didn't you make use of your freakishly long arms and get them yourself?" I then made use of my long arms to slap him, and was taken aback by the feeling that came over me as my hand bounced off his shoulder. The action had felt weird, wrong, but not in the sense that hitting was probably not the most mature reaction to an insult. No, this didn't feel like my brother. We had fought countless times growing up, but there was always a smidgen of affection underlying our annoyance-fueled interactions. I didn't know how to explain the difference, but I could sense that that connection was gone now. He just seemed cold, unlike himself. I said nothing about it during dinner, but brought it up later to my parents. "Hey, does Darren seem weird to you guys? You've been away for a while," explained my mother. "Your brother has changed a lot in the last few years." "Like, how?" I asked, not satisfied with the response. A grim look passed over my mom's face, and before she could answer, my dad piped up, his voice saturated with intense emotion. "Tell her, Audrey. Damn it, we can't pretend things aren't different." "What's different?" My heart quickened its pace. It was unlike him to speak so boldly towards my mom. That was when I found out about Islet, a company based in my hometown that was the first with the technology to take the unique perspective that you have, your sentience, and move it elsewhere. They had created a server of sorts where you could live as if you were in your own body, but you would be occupying a virtual form. There, it was supposed to be like a utopia. You could do anything, within and outside the human ability, and everything was 100% free. Of course, when I've referred to this product, it's been something to be sold, because despite there being no money involved, you do pay for Islet. My brother goes into work every day for 12 hours. That was the amount agreed upon, so that he could still have time to keep the members of his family company. My parents found this out through a note that he left under their bedroom door. The person that lives with us now isn't my brother though. Not really. It acts like him. It thinks like him. But there is some core component missing. His soul, his consciousness, whatever you want to call it, is in the Islet system, not here. Apparently, while I was away, my brother had become very depressed. For the first time, I was learning about the girlfriend that had broken up with him. This was also the first time I heard about his struggles with school, and the kids there that were not just mean-spirited, but brutal. I was instinctively angry at Darren for telling me so little about his life. It was frustrating to know that I was out of town and absorbed in my own struggles, while my brother was dealing with these things alone. So, Islet Services appealed to him. Islet representatives saw him struggling and scooped him up, 16 and vulnerable. He wrote in his note that this was a blessing. He might have done something much more drastic if he hadn't come across such an opportunity. Somehow, my mom bought into this idea. She seemed relieved that my brother was alive somewhere and supposedly much happier. My dad was much more upset, and so they argued for several weeks before his negative feelings towards the situation began to ease. As more and more people in the surrounding area heard about Islet, they joined the server. Advertisements were on the radio, on billboards, and even on the backs of bathroom stall doors. Bold, colourful letters would say things like, "Want to take a permanent vacation to a dream destination?" These vague offerings were enticing, and our neighbourhood quickly became one of empty shells. What was left of the bodies once their consciousness was transferred was completely functional. They operated just like the original person, only now they would work long hours for one of Islet's partner companies. Their minds worked, the metaphorical gears turning, but there wasn't anyone inside witnessing said cognition. I tried for a long time to get my brother back, calling representatives from the company and begging with them to let me speak to him. They insisted that this was not possible, and that their hands were tied when it came to releasing him from their server per my request, as he was apparently old enough to rightfully decide whether he wanted to stay or not. I was angry, not only at the company that preyed on my brother while he was in a vulnerable position, but also my parents, who coped with their loss by incorporating the non-sentient version of Darren into all of our family outings. They stopped talking about him as if he was somewhere else, and it wasn't uncommon for me to find myself looking at new Darren as if he was the same one I'd grown up with. I was horrified whenever this would happen. We continued on like this, my parents now in a perpetual state of delusion, and me distracting myself with a new job at a crummy diner, until the day Islet collapsed. We've received word that Islet servers have crashed. All information uploaded has been lost. All people lost. Islet has issued an apology and is aiming to work on the bugs in their program quickly in order to get it back up and running as soon as possible. For now, they will continue to make use of their patrons as is agreed upon in their contracts. The radio announcer delivered this message with a voice faltering slightly throughout. It was common knowledge that Melissa Bloom, one of the hosts of our local radio station, was a huge proponent of Islet, and had made the switch herself months ago. She dawdled on, and her attempt to process the permanent deletion of her already absent soul struck me as utterly blasphemous. I was physically sick over it, over the knowledge that our area was now heavily populated with what were essentially animated carcasses, and over my brother being one of them. I vaguely remember throwing up at work after hearing the broadcast, and then heading home immediately afterward to be with my parents. On my way, I called my mom on the phone, and our conversation was little more than an outlet for us to cry together. I stepped out of my car once I got to the house, and she rushed out with open arms to meet me where I stood in the driveway. All I wanted was to be held by her, to be provided with the assurance that everything was and would be all right. That wasn't what I got when her arms wrapped around me in a hug that reminded me of a cheap harness and a sketchy roller coaster. So tight, I could barely breathe, and yet, at the same time, not at all secure enough to convince me of my safety. None of the comfort I had always associated with my mother's embrace was present in this hug. It was wrong. She was wrong. The realization hit me with a force that nearly knocked me off my feet. I was already feeling faint from when I emptied the contents of my stomach earlier. "When?" was all I could get out as I recalled from her, my eyes beginning to blur with tears and my teeth gritted in anger. "A few days ago," she responded solemnly, attempting to reach out and brush a section of hair behind my ear, with apology etched on her features. I slapped her hand away. "How could you?" I retorted. I felt betrayed. I was furious with her and with everyone else letting this happen. "Your brother, I couldn't. Your father and I, we couldn't take it." My father? Did that mean he was also? I couldn't bear to finish the thought. I was sinking. The asphalt of the driveway was enveloping my body, and my senses were being drowned out by its black viscosity. I fainted. I came to on our living room couch. My dad was the first one to see that I was awake. "Hey, how are you feeling?" he asked, my head throbbing. My throat was incredibly dry. "Fine," I muttered. What a wildly insufficient word to describe the way I was feeling. This wasn't my dad. The woman I could hear singing while she opened and shut cupboards and clinked dishes together in the other room wasn't my mom. The boy lounging in the chair next to me wasn't my brother. The ones I loved had all disappeared with Islet's server. I couldn't be certain that they were dead, but I didn't dare entertain the possibility that they were in some sort of limbo. If an afterlife existed, I wanted to imagine that there was a possibility we could go to the same one. They had to be dead. That was easier. We had dinner together that night, and I made sure to reach for all of the dishes myself, rather than asking for someone to pass them. I didn't want to experience the sensation of disgust that would overtake my body if I made accidental contact with any of them. The day had been traumatic enough, and all I wanted to do now was have a nice meal with my family. If we don't touch, I can pretend that nothing has changed. I can pretend that Islet never existed, and that it didn't leave me more alone than I ever imagined I would be.